Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier BOGO offer. This offer expires Sunday, March 24th. To order yours today, go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code GRACEBOGO.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Good afternoon. I am not Grace Curley. I'm Aaron Chadbourne filling in this week. Thanks for being with us and having fun today on the Grace Curley Show. You know, someone did mention during the break that if they had taken Trump's assets, if they'd seized his hotels, he should just go squat in them. Squatter's rights. There are some very instructional videos on TikTok for how to do that. You might have to speak Spanish or have them translated in order to learn how. But you certainly, I hadn't thought about that. That could be a way to do it. And then Taylor during the break, too, was suggesting it's not a bad idea. All these hotels, and I was reading the story in the Boston Herald about the old Chelsea Soldiers home. Which is becoming a shelter. They're making it a shelter for, I assume, asylum seekers. And there are all these rules in place about what you have to be willing to do in order to use it. You have to say that you're trying to get work. You have to be trying to get into a better situation. But there are all these hotels that they're using that are getting destroyed because they're largely being used as a homeless shelter. And maybe with all of his new billions of dollars from the public offering of Truth Social and Trump Media, Trump could buy up these properties. He could bring New York back to its former glory. He could.
There's Wall Street. There's Trump Row.
I bet Trump, though, don't you think he would, if there was money to be made, don't you think he would just buy them and make the money from the government, like paying them or New York City or whoever is paying the leases and then doing it? If it makes money for him, I think he would do it. This about the old Chelsea Soldiers home, though. Have you been there, Jared? Have you ever seen this building?
I have not.
Because on the one hand, like, the fact that it's called the Soldiers Home probably is a bad look when people are being accused, like they are in Maine, where I live. They're being accused of putting asylum seekers first before veterans. Now, this is a vacant building, so it's not currently in use. And it was slated to be torn down. Is this a safe place to be putting them?
Well, that's the big question here. Again, we're not in the snowy season down here, so it's not like there's an emergency cold snap. Is it safe to be putting anybody in there, and is that really welcoming?
And are you opening up whichever government this is? Is it the state? Is it Maura Healey's talking about it? Yeah, so is it really – you're opening up, I think, the state to lawsuits in the future about unsafe housing conditions, right? If there's lead paint and asbestos and all of that needs to be remediated, which is very expensive, or – you're going to have these lawsuits years in the future and all of these payouts to the people that you forced to live there or that you allowed to live there. I will say to you, though, Jared, I know you're saying it's warm out. Can't they can't. Having gone through the year that we went through in Maine with asylum seekers and these tent cities all over the place and the public camping, for those of you who don't know, Portland, Maine decided not to enforce their ban on public camping. And so there were tent cities everywhere. And it was really unsafe. It was unsafe for the people staying there. It was unsafe for the people around there. The crime, the violence, the theft, the open air drug markets. It was, I wouldn't recommend it. Now, when it was, you know, a few homeless people in different spots scattered about, and it wasn't these big group congregate settings of tents, I think it was a little bit, I mean, some people would say, oh, just because you didn't see it. But no, it's because you weren't creating that public safety risk to so many people. And so I would say better to have people, because it's interesting, too, because the people that were in tents in Maine, it wasn't the asylum seekers. The asylum seekers all had housing. They had emergency shelters. They had these new apartments they're building up in Brunswick. It was people that were chronically homeless, either because of drug use, mental illness, or some other factor, like they had a pet that they didn't want to give up, so they didn't want to go to the shelter. Now that they're enforcing the no camping ban, it's dramatically improved outcomes, and things have gotten safer, and it's also helped put people into more permanent housing, which is what you want. You want to take care of your population. So I'm all for trying to find a place and have it be a place that's not at the airport or closing down schools. But man, you have to imagine it's like trying to solve one problem and creating a whole new one, which is probably what they're doing in Gaza right now. But that's more controversial to talk about. I mean, this Israel thing, it's an example for me of just how bad Joe Biden is at foreign policy. And we were told when he was elected that finally the adults are going to be in charge again. And thank goodness that Joe Biden has all of this foreign policy experience. And I just think that he continues to make every situation worse, whether it's Ukraine, if it's Israel and Hamas. I mean, he just makes every single thing worse. What's this? There's an alert apparently about the embassy in Paris is putting out an alert for terror. We'll have to look into what that is. I imagine on the heels of the attack in Russia, which I love that Russia is quick to just blame it on Ukraine, like no matter what. And then the narrative comes out that it was an inside job. Honestly, like anyone who attacks civilians at a concert, it's just terrible. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out because the shoe's on the other foot with Russia. But Joe Biden, I always think when I see National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, when he comes out and speaks, or Tony Blinken, they remind me of those kids in college or high school, depending on where you went, that did Model UN. And they would always have these kind of like, you know, fire drills in the middle of the night where they'd, you know, have to go and negotiate because, you know, Israel was attacked by Hamas in Gaza. And they think they understand what they're doing, but they're really like, they really every time strike me as little kids playing dress up and people that fundamentally don't understand the threats that we face in the world. And they're just not up for the job. And so this massive bureaucracy that they've set up trying to play State Department around the world, it's just it's a failure. It's a massive failure. And everything they do tends to fail. All right. You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. 844-500-4242 is the number if you would like to call. Or you can text at 617-213-1066. You text Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to the text line if you want to weigh in. And I do read the text, including the texter that asked. They said the Ronna McDaniel story was really reminiscent for them of the hiring of Megyn Kelly. When they hired Megyn Kelly, wasn't there the same outrage? It's interesting, too, you bring up Megyn Kelly, because it was right before Tucker Carlson got fired from Fox News. Someone had talked to me about how he was like kind of the most influential person in America right now. And I said, isn't it funny? Because he has that time slot. But if you look at that time slot and you look at the people that came before him, Megyn Kelly, who rose to the top and she was everywhere. And then she took this deal with NBC that tanked her career, essentially. Bill O'Reilly had that time slot, and then he had, what did he leave? Some like sexual abuse scandal. Like, and then he like was hobbled. And then right after that happened, Tucker Carlson, same thing, although Tucker now charting his own path. Would you say, is Jesse Waters the new star at Fox News? Is that?
Yeah, I think he's the new big head honcho there.
Do people like him?
Yeah. I mean, he seems like he's not a rhino. I haven't watched a lot of it, but it seems like he's not a rhino as a lot of people on the network are. And he's actually a pretty funny, entertaining guy.
He is funny. I just don't know if his show, because I think his shtick, because he started out on Bill O'Reilly, he would do those man on the street things, and then he's went on The Five, and I think his, you know, he's a little bit funnier, and then I think he in the later program, I just don't know. I don't know how his new show is doing. I'll have to check the ratings on that and see how it's going. But
yeah, I mean, I honestly couldn't even tell you who he's up against at this point. I have no idea who's on what network.
I mean, Judge Jeanine's still there, right? Does she still have a show, or she's on The Five?
I know she. I think she does have a show.
And Laura Ingraham, they made earlier. Sean Hannity kept his slot, and then they moved. Who's the guy that does the late night show? Tries to be funny.
Is that Gutfeld?
Gutfeld. I just find him annoying. And I think his shtick is funny, but I think he's annoying. I don't like to watch annoying things. But then again, I'm on talk radio, so who am I to say anything? All right. So we have a lot more show coming up for you. Toby Leary will be here, so get your Second Amendment-related questions ready for Toby. 844-500-4242 is the number if you want to weigh in and talk to Toby, because he will be here in studio. And we'll continue to bring coverage of Ronna McDaniel. I keep refreshing this story because I really want to know. Like, they know they're going to have to pay her out, right? Like, they're not going to be able to just fire her and walk away from it. They entered into a contract. They announced it. and then they had to back away from it. So it's going to cost them at NBC money. So I'm still waiting to get the details. We'll bring those to you as soon as we have them. Maybe no one else cares. Maybe I'm the only one. And then if you haven't taken the poll question yet, which you can take at gracecurlyshow.com, we'll be interested in your feedback to see how many people think that these legal proceedings against Donald Trump are actually on the up and up. So gracecurlyshow.com for the poll question, if you would like to do that. And I really do appreciate the people that weighed in about Marjorie Taylor Greene, because I am not a Marjorie Taylor Greene fan, but I think the caller that said there's a place for her on the team, and then that's a role that someone needs to play, and that they respect someone who's willing to stand up for conservatives and not bow in the face of pressure, that you need kind of a street fighter figure to do that. I'm persuaded by that argument. It doesn't make me like her anymore, but I think that's a passable argument, so I don't mind it. We've got a lot more show coming up for you here on The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, filling in for Grace. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
We're back on The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Grace, staying on top of all of today's stories, including President Donald Trump and his news yesterday that he's only going to have to put up a bond of $175 million, which he says he will do in all cash. I did like the caller that suggested he bring in dollar bills, that he make it rain for Letitia James. But we want to know, he did start out his press conference yesterday throwing shade at Joe Biden and his thugs. Let's hear that.
This is all about election interference. This is all Biden-run things, meaning Biden and his thugs, because I don't know if he knows he's alive. And it's a shame. It's a shame what's happening to our country. This is election interference.
I think he called him Biden and his thugs because they said Don Corleone this weekend. They were making him sound like a mobster. And, Trump never wanted to turn the other cheek. That's what we asked about in today's poll question, which you can take at gracecurlyshow.com. Today's poll question, of course, is brought to you by the Nauset Beach Inn. Book your spring stay at Nauset Beach Inn with April rates starting at $249.99. Really a good rate. You can reserve your pet-friendly ocean view room with a fireplace. Go to NausetBeachInn.com. That's NausetBeachInn.com. All right, Jared, what is today's poll question and what are our answers thus far?
The poll question is, do you agree with Trump that Biden and his thugs are behind the prosecutions as a form of election interference? Yes, it's a coordinated conspiracy. Yes, but only because the judicial system has been overtaken by progressives with Trump derangement syndrome, or no, it's on the up and up.
I mean, I think number two is true also, but I'm going to say yes, it's actually concerted. They're having meetings in the White House about this.
Yeah, 77% of the audience say it's a coordinated conspiracy. 22% say it's because of Trump derangement syndrome, and 1% still thinks it's on the up and up.
Do you think someone just fell asleep on their keyboard? I mean, it was 3% to start the show. So as more people have filled it out, more people have seemed to figure it out. Speaking of people that help us figure things out, Toby Leary joins us each week at this time for 2A Tuesday. Toby Leary, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for filling in for Grace, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You know, I get nervous every time I come into Massachusetts and talk about guns because y'all have some crazy laws down here. And they're always trying to make them worse. What can you tell us about the status of that terrible bill in the Massachusetts legislature, Toby?
It is a terrible bill, as you say, Aaron. It is in conference committee right now. And the big thing is it's in the hands of six different committee members. So three senators, three members of the House. And it's no surprise which ones are on the Democrat side, the two senators and the two representatives that are on the Democrat side are Cynthia Cream and Joan Lovely on the Senate side, and Michael Day and Carlos Gonzalez. All four of them combined are horrific for the gun movement, the 2A movement. Cindy Cream is an annual offender of introducing unconstitutional gun control legislation every single session. And so she's getting her dream come true with this bill. that they're now debating. It's House Bill H4139, and the two representatives from the Republican Party are on the Senate side, Bruce Tarr, who's the House Minority Leader, and the Joseph McKenna on the House side. Now, Bruce Tarr actually went along and voted for the bill after blowing a lot of smoke all morning before they took the vote about how it was unconstitutional. It wasn't ready for a vote. They never had a hearing. And so one concession that has come out of the conference committee is that they are doing it in a public way. Like normally they go behind closed doors and they hash out all the details of this. One thing I will say is probably because they didn't have any type of hearings on the Senate side, they are allowing the public to view the debate over what infringements and unconstitutional laws will ultimately be the law of the land here in Massachusetts. So it's kind of hard to speculate where this is all going to go. The Senate version was a lot different than the House version. I hope that they just can't reconcile the bill and they run out of time. That would be the best case scenario for the people who live behind the lines in Massachusetts, because it wouldn't pass. So that's what I'm hoping happens, although I'm not too confident that will happen, because both sides hate guns more than they hate each other. In other words, the House and the Senate, they hate each other, but they hate each other less than they hate guns. So they'll probably figure out a way to make something stick.
They hate each other less than they like wielding power and taking rights away from people, I think.
Right. Oh, exactly. Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, Aaron, I was in Colorado last week on Tuesday for the Colorado has a very similar bill to what passed here in Massachusetts. And one thing that has come into sharp focus and become abundantly clear, I speculated that the Mass House, Michael Day's office did not actually write this bill. I speculated that it was a group like Moms Demand Action or Giffords, because he posed in his office with Giffords and his arm around her. And I'm sure she was dropping off a big fat campaign check for the reelection of Michael Day and whatnot. So I always speculated that it was an anti-gun group that wrote this bill because of the language that you see in other states and whatnot. It certainly wasn't just Massachusetts politicians trying to figure out how to make it better for Massachusetts residents. And this became abundantly clear last week when I was in Colorado, and the two sponsors of the Colorado bill actually came out and said that, yeah, we consulted with the anti-gun group agencies like Giffords and Brady and all of the different anti-gun groups out there to come up with this bill. They actually said the quiet part out loud, and the bill is almost identical to Massachusetts' bill, other than it actually takes it a couple steps further, believe it or not. So, yeah, they're very active in state legislatures, and we see this happening all throughout the country. It is absolutely maddening that politicians who were tasked with being the gatekeepers of our rights, according to the author of the Constitution, James Madison, have now become the right taker and think that they're the ones that grant the rights in the first place.
They can't help themselves, Toby. And I want to ask you more about your trip to Colorado when we come back. Plus, we want to take questions for Toby if you have questions about guns, Second Amendment, 844-500-4242. You're listening to 2A Tuesday on The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
We are back here on the Grace Curley Show. Grace is off today, but I'm Aaron Chadbourne, and joining us like he does every week on Tuesday is Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. Toby, thanks for being here. People that have questions, 844-500-4242. Feel free to call in if you want to talk to Toby. So, Toby, here's a question. If that law passes, which we expect that it might, what are retailers like yourself going to need to do? Like, is there a recourse? Do you have to sue the state over the unconstitutional law, or how's that going to play out?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, in the bill that was passed in the House Judiciary in Colorado last week actually affects 80 to 90% of the guns sold in an average gun shop. I haven't done the deep dive into how many guns it affects us here in Massachusetts, but it certainly affects us almost 100% of the semi-automatic rifles sold in Massachusetts. I can think of maybe one or two semi-automatic rifles that might slip through the cracks and not be banned, but it's very, very few. And so, you know, we will be looking at a major business decision. What do we do? You know, A, do we limp along and sell what we can sell and sue and try to get injunctive relief? That's probably what we would do. Or B, do we just say, you know what, this is completely unconstitutional, roll the dice and just not change anything as a business decision and eventually do the perp walk, because I'm sure that's what would happen. They'd love to nail me to the wall and hang me like a trophy on the wall of, you know, whatever prosecutor's office gets the nod to bring the hammer down. Or C, do we just say, you know what, we had a good run and fold shop, which is them winning. So that is the least likely scenario to happen for me. I'm not a quitter. I don't want to just concede. I believe we need to stand and fight where the fight is, because if we don't, guess what? It migrates. It's like a bad disease. It's a cancer. They're not going to be happy when Maryland and New York and New Jersey and Massachusetts and California all completely fall. And now they can see across the state to New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont, you know, all the free states. They're not going to sit idly by. They're going to take the battle everywhere they possibly can. So
it's like with these Trump rulings, right? To take Trump off the ballot. Like, it happens in one state. Someone sees it and a social justice warrior jumps on it, tries to bring it to another state. We're talking to Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks, as we do every 2A Tuesday. 844-500-4242 is the number if you would like to call in. Let's go to Gary in Biddeford, Maine. I love my Maine callers. Go ahead, Gary. You're on with Toby.
Hey, Toby. How you doing there? And when I was going hunting when I was a teenager, I used a 410 bolt-over action gun. And the second day of hunting in my whole life, I shot a deer, had a big slug in the chamber, shot it. And then once my father knew that me and my twin brother liked hunting, he went to Zaya's department store and bought us each a 20-gauge Mossberg. What do you think about that 410 bolt-over?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit light if you're hunting deer, but they do make some slugs for it and some buckshot for it. But I would say you'd probably be limited to 20, 30 yards just based on the velocity of those rounds coming out of a bolt-action shotgun. But it sounds like it got the job done for you, Gary. So I have taken youth hunting with the 410 gauge when, you know, they were 12, 13, 14 years old. I like the 20 gauge a whole lot better. Think it's a much better option. I certainly love the bolt action 20 gauge slug guns that are on the market today, like the Savage 220 is a real popular one in a bolt action. And then the one I'm probably going to get myself is the Benelli M2, which is a rifled slug barrel, but it's semi-automatic. I'm currently using the 20 gauge Thompson Center Arms, the Encore Pro Hunter, which is no longer made, unfortunately. And I like that because I can switch it out to my muzzleloader barrel and also to a 308 barrel if I'm going up north and hunting in a state that allows centerfire rifle. But all those choices, 20 gauge slug guns have really caught fire in the last 5-10 years, and they're very accurate and they pack quite a punch. They have a better ballistic coefficient than the 12 gauge slugs do, and they've become kind of the staple for hunting in Massachusetts, especially, or any other shotgun only states. But up in Biddeford, Maine, Gary, I'd go with a center fire rifle if I were you, but that's just my own opinion. So good luck with that, and I hope you put down the big one this season.
But Toby, what if the deer are wearing Kevlar vests? What do you do then?
Yeah, you know, that is a concern. so you might need to use the light armor piercing round if they're wearing the
Kevlar vest.
We're going short on time, but let's take one more call. We'll go to John in Rhode Island. Welcome to the show, John. You're on with Toby Leary.
Hey, Toby. Hey, guys. How you doing? Quick question about Rhode Island gun laws. I'm a Mass resident with my LTC traveling in Rhode Island. What's legal and how do I go about getting a non-resident license in Rhode Island?
Yeah, it used to be pretty easy in some towns. There were some towns you weren't going to get it, but there was a couple of towns that were known for you know, kind of rubber stamping if you had a Mass gun license. They would kind of give you the rubber stamp approval. It wasn't a deep dive where other towns would basically tell you no. I haven't heard of any changes being made since the Bruin case, where it changed from may issue to shall issue. So I don't know. Like, Rhode Island has historically been a very difficult town to get a or state to get a license to carry in. But you didn't need a license to buy a gun there. So you could buy basically whatever gun you wanted. You just couldn't carry it. So I don't know if things have changed in a post-Bruin world for non-resident license to carry there. But I know prior to the Bruin decision, they were very restrictive and there was one or two towns that you could go to, but I heard even that kind of stopped. So I wish I had better info for you, John, about the Rhode Island non-resident license to carry, but the best place to start is to just call up a couple of police departments, maybe even the Rhode Island State Police, and find out, say, I travel there often and I'd like to get my license to carry. I'm a licensed gun owner in Massachusetts, and they'll tell you what's the best way to get through that maze, because they are not a gun-friendly state, just like Massachusetts, but they do issue the non-resident license to carry, unlike New York, so you have that going for you.
Thanks for the call, John. Toby, remind people, if they want to learn more from you, visit the shop, where can they go, and where can they hear more from you?
Yeah, great. Thanks so much, Aaron. So they can get up to date with everything we have going on in our shop with two different radio shows. I have one on Sunday on WXTK called Rapid Fire every Sunday from noon to one. It's a live call-in show. You can listen on the iHeartRadio app. And also we have a podcast that I live stream on Wednesday from 4 to 6 called Rapid Fire as well. And if you go to rapidfireradio.us, you can sign up to be alerted whenever we go live. Sometimes we do special breaking news type of editions throughout the week, and you don't want to miss out on that. But I would say more importantly, like and subscribe to all the social media places that you use, whether it's Facebook or YouTube. Although I will say Facebook, we've been shut down by Zuckerberg since the beginning of the year. So we've kind of been deplatformed on Facebook. We're still limping along on Instagram and YouTube, but Rumble, Telegram, Twitter, Twitch, those are all working great for us. So you can follow wherever you consume your social media. And also would love to show you around at Cape Gunworks in Hyannis. If you want to stop in the store, say hello and maybe throw a few rounds down range. We have a 20,000 square foot facility with a state-of-the-art indoor range and a beautiful pro shop that's fully stocked right now, much to my business partner's chagrin. So come take some heat off me and come leave us of some of this inventory, and it'd be much appreciated. But I'd love to show you around and have you down here at Cape Gunworks. But thanks for having me on, Aaron. And we're always here for 2A Tuesday, so you can always hear us there as well.
Well, great to talk to you, Toby. Appreciate you being here. Grace is off, but we're appreciating that you're here for a great 2A Tuesday here on the Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne in for Grace Curley. One more segment when we come back.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. This is the Grace Curley Show.
At about 1:30, a container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware in our trainer by car. Been in Baltimore Harbor many times.
Do you think he said by train or by car because he didn't know which? He's like, I got there somehow. By train or by car or by plane or by walking. Took a water taxi, Jack. I mean, there is no train over the bridge. And again, the president doing what presidents should do by addressing the country. He said he wouldn't take questions, and then he did. They asked if he'd go. He says, yeah, I'm going to get there right away. But he did also say that about East Palestine, and then it took him over a year to actually visit. So do you think maybe that should be tomorrow's poll question. We'll ask how quickly people think that Biden's going to get to Baltimore. Because it is close to D.C. You can go by car or helicopter, I guess. Or
train.
Or by train. When the bridge collapsed, does the train still go over it? I mean, it's hard to make jokes about it because it's such a tragedy, and thank goodness that they at least had some warning to stop some cars from going on there. But I can't imagine at 1:30 in the morning, you're just driving along, minding your business. You go over a bridge, get struck by a container ship. In 35 seconds, this all collapsed. It's horrible. It's terrifying. And we wish them well in their search for, it's really a recovery effort at this point. There's a NTSB press conference going on right now as they try to investigate and figure out what went on. I've been watching on Twitter too. There are people in videos where they've like sped up the footage, which is just a very slow motion disaster, but it's horrifying. Someone tell me, Tyler was saying that the mayor of Baltimore has asked people to stop playing the footage.
Yeah. He did an interview with CNN or a hit with CNN and asked them to stop showing it, because it's traumatic for people, which is understandable, but I mean, it's still kind of news. You have to show it.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we can do in the future. When we see like video of Biden, like walking or answering questions, we can say, can you please stop showing that? That's just traumatic. It is, though, for people that are affected. If you had family members who were, I can understand that. But I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when you watch the video of the plane striking the Twin Towers, every now and then you just watch it again, right? Because it's a historic moment. It's a huge disaster. You almost can't believe it. Although, do you think there are going to be any truthers on this one that think it was really an inside
job? I mean, there always are, but I think this one was pretty straightforward.
It's still the boat sitting there too, and it looks like it. The bridge, the way they constructed it, it looks like those like connects, like those toys, the whatever Rector set. You know, it's just to watch how it did. Well, it is time now for the car crossover. Can't do it when I'm out of studio, so I'm glad to be in studio to check in with Howie Carr. Howie, do you think that it was by car or by train that Biden traveled across that bridge?
I don't know. It's too bad we can't ask Angelo, the guy who told him, Joey Baby, or the guy in the club car who told him he was gay, or Casey Jones, the engineer. I mean, none of those people are available anymore, I guess. They're all
Joey Baby.
Maybe his dad, when they were sitting in the car watching a same-sex couple kiss, and said to him, Joey, love is love.
Right. Right, or maybe he took the train to Delaware State when he became the first white person to be there.
Was that after he was in prison with Nelson Mandela?
Right, yeah. I don't know if that was before or after. And then he tried out for the Naval Academy football team with Joe Bellino and Roger Staubach, even though they weren't even contemporaries, let alone with Joe Biden. But he played
Google
with
it.
Amazing how he still managed to graduate top of his class after all of that.
Yeah, I think it's been so much news. I still haven't really gotten into the whole thing about. I want to just type it in as my column, that stuff from the Her report where he's talking about the guy having his testicles burned off. And then he segues into the fact that he went to the Wilmington Club and where they don't let in Catholics or blacks. I mean, it's total Grandpa Simpson. And I don't blame Comer and Jordan for wanting to get the audio tape. We'd play it every day.
Oh, yeah. I think Robert Herr, though, can you imagine having been him and trying to keep a straight face and actually, like, you get that radio guest every now and then that goes on and on. You want to bring them back in. How do you do that to Joe Biden?
I thought he did a great job. If I ever lose my mind and, you know, I'm a victim of dementia, I would like him to be a, I'd like a caregiver like him. I mean, he's a very kindly person. You know, the, I, that's the impression I got. That's a very interesting story, Mr. President. But did you really steal all those documents that you had no right to?
So when you knowingly stole them and and showed them to people you knew you shouldn't have, like, how did that make you feel?
So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time.
And I wore it into the Wilmington Club.
I did want to ask you, I'm sitting here reading the Herald, because I'm in studio, so the Boston Herald's sitting here, and they're turning the old Chelsea Soldiers home into a shelter for asylum seekers. Is that a better idea to take a condemned building meant to be torn down and house a bunch of homeless people there? Or I mean, at least they're not in the school anymore.
I guess. But, you know, the thing is, it's ironic that the day they announced that is the same day they announced the plea deal for the killing, basically, of 76 veterans at the Holyoke Soldiers Home by the incompetence of the administration. And they've cut a apparently the hack who was appointed by Charlie Baker after a $1,000 contribution. He's going to plead guilty today, but he's still not going to have to do any jail time. It helps when your uncle's the former district attorney and is handling your plea bargaining.
That's usually, Howie, good for career advancement. That's how we got Dr. Nirav Shah in Maine. He got fired in Illinois for killing all of those veterans with Legionnaires' disease. We brought him over to Maine. Janet Mills hired him as director. And now he's deputy director of the CDC. So you can always fail up, Howie.
Yeah, you can. It's just amazing. And then his assistant, or not his assistant, his boss was a DEI hire, and they set those two guys up, the hack at the superintendent of the home and the Veterans Affairs secretary. They set them up as the fall guys for Baker hiring these incompetent people, just like he hired incompetent people down at the Registry of Motor Vehicles, and seven ex-Marines ended up getting killed in the White Mountains by the guy who should have had his license pulled, the alien. Or, you know, all the they had to disband the state police troop on the Mass Pike because everybody was taking payoffs. I mean, and Charlie Baker, talk about failing upwards. Guy's making $3.5 million a year now at the NCAA in Indianapolis.
Ronna McDaniels needs to take some lessons from him. I mean, although I think she's going to get her whole $300,000 contract paid in a week, so maybe she knows what she's doing. Howie, look forward to the show. Everyone, stay tuned. Howie Carr coming up next.